Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. The updated LQ site that I've been talking quite a bit about recently, and also posting quite a bit about recently, is now in a sort of internal beta, and the new release is scheduled to go live on the morning of December 3rd, which is just over about a week and a half away, so it's coming up pretty quickly now. For those listeners who are LQ members, you've, like I said, seen quite a bit about this, and the amount of feature upgrades and differences with the current site are quite significant, but we have made a very concerted effort to keep the look and feel kind of similar to it is now, with most of the focus going on the data and information available, not on a flashy look or anything like that. So while it's quite a bit of functionality upgrade, I think you'll be comfortable with the look. You can look forward to more news on this. I should be posting something by this Saturday with more notes about how you can expect the upgrade to take place, the downtime that unfortunately will be involved, and just some more information in general. Now on to the news. First story I have is birthday memo leaked on purpose. I mentioned the birthday memo in the last podcast, and Robert Kringley thinks that the birthday memo might have been leaked on purpose. Some of the reasons that he gives for this really do make sense. It could be Microsoft using this as a PR stunt meant to both entice Wall Street, which they have been having somewhat of a problem with lately, while also painting Google as the bad guy, and kind of by an indirect association, painting itself as the good guy, which is something that they're not often painted as. Here's a snippet from the Kringley article. These Microsoft memos look like a plan to do the same thing Microsoft thinks Google will be doing. By publicly stating their plans and putting those plans in the hands of Wall Street, Microsoft is giving the perception that they are doing the same things as Google, so Microsoft will be as good an investment as Google. End quote. So the real questions for me are, is Microsoft sincere in this focus change? Whether the memos were leaked on purpose really doesn't matter in this context. And two, if it is sincere, will it be able to execute on those plans? Don't forget that, historically, Microsoft is not willing in any way to do anything that even has a remote chance of damaging their two cash cows, which of course are Microsoft Windows and Microsoft Office. So I did wonder what others were saying about this, and both Scoble and many Microsoft have had posts, and I recommend that you read both of those for further information. Next up, Google is at it again. This time it's Web Analytics. This is another you probably saw it coming from Google, but as usual, they have gone above and beyond. So what am I talking about? As the title indicated, this time it's Google Analytics. From the Google Analytics page, quote, Google Analytics tells you everything you want to know about how your visitors found you and how they interact with your site. You'll be able to focus your marketing resources on campaigns and initiatives that deliver ROI and improve your site to convert more visitors. Basically, they took the Urchin product that they had acquired last March, added some AdWords integration and some Google polish, and then made it free. After release, the site was extremely slow, if not completely down, quite often, but as of now, things seem to have settled down. Google once again, and this is something that they've been doing quite a bit, gets access to more data about how people browse and how people use the data that they have. One interesting thing that I noticed about the user agreement on this is that it claimed the product was for non-commercial use only. Now that seems extremely odd given the marketing verbiage that they put on the product. When you see things like track ROI, track initiatives, integration with AdWords, it seems odd that it would be a non-commercial product. Now it might just be a typo, or it could mean something like there's a paid layered product coming soon. Or it may even mean that you can use it on commercial sites, but not offer Google Analytics itself in any kind of commercial capacity. So we'll have to wait and see. I'm sure they'll give some clarification on that one. Another limitation that they give you is that unless you have an AdWords account, you can only use this for a maximum of 5 million impressions a month, which for a lot of sites, really, that's not very much. Now, how did this news impact the industry in general? Well, website story stock fell almost 15% on the news of this, so that should give you a good idea of the impact this is going to have. But the reality on this one, I think, is that this was the worst Google rollout ever, and this product wasn't even released as a beta. Just to give you an idea, I got in early the very first morning, and the site was almost unusable, but up. I got a quick site or two set up, and I didn't do linuxquestions.org or any of the main sites. I just kind of am testing this on my blog and a couple of our smaller sites. And when I signed up, it said that I'd have reports available somewhere between 6 and 12 hours. Shortly after I was able to sign up, the site went into a maintenance mode and was completely down for a while. I tried a little after midnight that night, and the site was back up again, so slow that it was almost unusable, and I still had no reports. The next day I tried, and even after 48 full hours, which is quadruple the high estimate of when they thought reports would be ready, I still didn't have reports. Now, I can appreciate that the product is new, but they probably should have put it in beta. And I can appreciate that it's, you know, a gratis product that's free, but from what I understand, even the paid urchin people were out of reports. So all in all, it was a bit on Google. They typically release things, they know they're going to get a lot of traffic, and they prepare for it. And that's something that they've been pretty good at, barring a few exceptions. One thing that I think exacerbated the situation is that they were completely mum on the topic. A quick, you know, sorry, we under-anticipated demand, or this took more resources than we thought, we'll have things working in X hours, would have done a whole lot to quell the harsh feelings that I saw people posting around. So my first impression once reports were actually up was that it was extremely slick. The data you get is presented in a useful manner, and you do get a significant amount of data with this product. It has all the reports you'd expect, the simple ones such as visits and page views and those, and also has some extremely powerful functionality with regard to conversion tracking, campaign tracking, funnels, goals, and a slew of other things that, while I probably won't use, marketing people will just love. It also has some really slick features, and one that I'm going to highlight here is the GeoMap overlay. And it's a pretty cool map overlaid with the traffic you get. The dot gets bigger as the traffic for a certain area increases. So it's a quick way to see where exactly your traffic is coming from a world perspective. One thing that I did notice was missing now that was there originally when I first signed up is the site overlay. It is still in the help section last time I looked, so I hope it returns soon. Now, I know that I've used Web Trends in the past, and they make a fairly big deal out of this feature. And it's basically your site overlaid with your stats, so you can click through and see exactly people's paths through your site and exit pages and entrance pages, things that a lot of stats packages give you, but actually overlaid onto your site. One thing that I did notice as an omission of data that I personally like is full refer info. Now, you can see that foo.com sent X number of people to you, but you don't get the full URL, just the domain name. Now, it may be just that I'm missing it, and I haven't gotten into this very deeply, so I hope it's just an oversight on my part. But if that is missing, I would consider that a fairly big oversight. So, all in all, this is an extremely good offering that should make most people happy, especially if you use AdWords. On the AdWords note, when I logged into my AdWords account the other day, it asked me to convert my existing login to a Google one, which would theoretically be the same one that I used to sign up for Google Analytics. So in the end, it looks like Analytics, AdWords, and probably AdSense will all use the same login. At that point, if you do use the same login for all of them and not create different ones, the amount of correlation that Google will be able to do at that point is significant. The amount of data mining Google could do with Analytics alone is significant, in fact. See, before with AdSense, they could do a fair amount of mining, but a large piece of the puzzle was missing, and that is, they didn't know what percentage of your pages you ran the code on. It could be 1%, it could be 100%, and that difference would have a significant impact on the information that they gathered. Since they didn't know that, some assumptions couldn't be made with your data. Now, by definition, you're going to run analytics on 100% of pages, at least within a given area that you're trying to track. It wouldn't make much sense if you didn't. The data would be useless not only to them, but to you. Now, I want to be clear here. It's not that I don't trust Google. In fact, I trust the Google of today to an extremely high degree. I think Larry and Sergey and the company in general have proven their moral, you know, where their morals are and the direction that they want to go. In my opinion, I think they've also proven that they're going to do the right thing. But what about the Google of tomorrow or the next day? They sure do have access to a significant amount of data, and they also have shown they have a lot of smart people that know how to use it. They have deep pockets, lofty goals, and like I said, a huge number of really, really smart people. In the wrong hands, the data that they have could be extremely dangerous. Let's take a fairly innocuous example just to give you an idea. How tempting will it be when times get lean, and they will get lean at some point, to see who spends a lot on AdWords and then send them a little bit less organic traffic in the hopes that they'll bump up their ad dollars to make up for it. Now that one seems unlikely, as Google clearly gets that having the best search engine is tantamount to their plans, but you get the idea here. Let's hope they do the right thing, not only today with Larry and Sergey still around and at the helm along with Eric, but let's hope they do the right thing tomorrow. Next story is OSDL and the Linux kernel community. I had mentioned previously that I hoped Greg's comment on OSDL's technical management was just an anomaly or even just a simple miscommunication. Greg was kind enough to point out that this was unfortunately not the case, and I'm going to take a quote from his blog. "Currently, they seem to be still ignoring us as nothing has changed. Yeah, lots of talk, but no real actions. But we have a slot on the board meeting in January to discuss our point of view, so we're not giving up yet." End quote. So also, as I previously mentioned, I'd hate to see OSDL drop the ball here. Their distribution agnostic employment of people like Linus and Andrew and Tridge, and as well as a lot of the quote worker bees that probably don't get as much recognition as they should, as one OSDL employee pointed out to me, not only become extremely important, but really woven right into the current framework of Linux development. Now, it's not like either Linus or Andrew or many of the people there would be hurting for a job if something were to happen to OSDL. Companies would be waiting in line to sign that check. But would the company offer the kind of vendor-neutral, distribution-agnostic, non-commercial setup that they all currently have there? That I don't think is as clear as if they'd get employment. Linus has certainly shown that the aforementioned distribution-agnostic employment is something that he has a high value of, and for very good reason. Now, I mentioned when I posted a story about this on my blog that I'd be happy to help in whatever capacity I could. I'm happy to say that I have been in contact with some people from OSDL since that post, and hopefully I'll be able to contribute in some positive way, and I will keep you guys posted on the progress of that. Next story, Microsoft to open up Office formats. This is a topic I've covered quite a bit recently, and one that I think is extremely important. The main problem that I saw with this press release is the lack of details. Now, I've seen rumors that only the information to write will be included, which would seem odd considering that Massachusetts' main concern was people being able to read governed documents, but I haven't been able to verify that. I think it should be noted here that the standardization that was talked about in this press release was at least 12 to 18 months off, and in this industry, 12 to 18 months is an eternity. It should also be noted that what Microsoft proposed here was for their Office formats to become an ISO standard or ISO standard, not a completely open standard. Now, this could give Microsoft the ability to say that their documents are quote-unquote standard without being beneficial to others in the way that a standard that was developed transparently in the open would do. And how they would do this is, let's say they release Office version X. I think the next version is 12. And then they submit that format to ISO. Let's figure in there 12 to 18 months later. And they might even say they submit it in while the Office 12 is in beta. So let's go with the low estimate of 12 months later, the standard becomes available, and people like OpenOffice.org and KOffice and others can properly implement the standard. But by the time that's done, a year after it comes out, Office version X.1 is not going to be that far off. So Microsoft could completely change the format, submit to ISO, and the waiting game begins again. So in reality, the competition's access to the formats lags so far behind Microsoft's access that it becomes nearly useless and just as bad as it is now. But Microsoft, once again, has the guise of being a standard, so they still get the government contracts with really no gain. So, it's kind of sneaky. This is a topic, as you will have guessed, that I will be watching closely, and I'll be sure to update you in the podcast as more information on this becomes available. The last story I have for you today, MySQL AB to counter Oracle's buy of InnoBase. And this is another issue that I've talked about a bit recently. So it looks like MySQL AB may be developing their own transactional database engine for MySQL. Here's a quote from the article that was posted on Computer World. Obviously, because Oracle made that acquisition, we are evaluating options to replace that functionality in some way, said Richard Mason, who's the vice president of MySQL for Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. We're not at the point yet where we can go public with what that plan is, but we will be shortly, end quote. So obviously here, still not a ton of concrete information available, but at least it's now clear which way MySQL AB is going to go with this. One still has to wonder, though, why they didn't acquire InnoBaseOi themselves when they had the chance. Whether MySQL AB will attempt to write the new engine from scratch or use one of the existing ones as a base remains to be seen, although based on the amount that the current engines are maintained, I would tend to lean towards them trying to start from scratch. This could also just be posturing as sort of an attempt to get Oracle to renegotiate the InnoDB deal, but considering the size of MySQL versus the size of Oracle and the histories of the two companies involved there, that seems completely unlikely to me and almost impossible. I still find it interesting that Oracle considers MySQL AB a direct competitor. I always, to be honest, considered them more of an indirect competitor. One thing is becoming clear here, though, and that is MySQL AB is in a tough space right now. With Firebird and SQLite and Postgres gaining popularity on the open side of things, and free or extremely inexpensive versions of Oracle, MSSQL, and DB2 available on the proprietary side, MySQL is now in that sometimes dangerous middle ground. They do, however, have one significant advantage, and that is application support. If they can continue the current trend of many popular apps only containing support for MySQL, that could be the wild card that they need. As these other databases gain in popularity, though, that might be an extremely tough thing to do. That's all I have for now. Thanks for listening.